This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King, a member of the House Judiciary Committee. We want to get his thoughts on a couple of topics today. Number one, the revolution in Egypt. And secondly, what happened on the House vote earlier this week when it came to renewing certain provisions of the Patriot Act. And Congressman, it's always great to have you with us.
No, it's great to be back, Greg. I appreciate it.
Well, let's start real briefly on Egypt here. Obviously, yesterday we thought we were going to see Mubarak step down. It didn't happen. It did happen today, and obviously now the big question is what happens next. From the perspective of what's best for the United States, how do you read what happened today?
Well, at first, that Mubarak declined to step down yesterday, as was anticipated, and then he left the country and went to the United Arab Emirates, and then he stepped down. I don't know what anyone else would read into that. I think he probably decided he wanted to get out of the country while he was still president and then do his resignation from a safe distance. You can figure a few things into that. But I'd say today where we are is that, you know, the force of the Muslim Brotherhood, that one needs to be very concerned about. And yet it looks like the most stable force in Egypt is the military. Our American military has strong ties to the Egyptian military. We do operations in the Sinai Desert together. I know our Iowa Guard people have been a full number of times deployed there. And so the stability of the Egyptian military, I never thought I'd find myself in this condition, saying that it looks like that's the best protection against the radical Islamists that are seeking to take over Egypt. And if the military can provide that stability, then I think of the image of George Washington, our commander-in-chief, who decided that he wanted to turn this country back over to the people. I'm hopeful that that inspiration is something would inspire the Egyptian military if that's what transpires here over the next few days.
What's the best thing the United States can do to make sure that the most stable things do, in fact, ensue in Egypt and fears like the Muslim Brotherhood rising to power don't happen?
Well, the president's message has been a kind of a moving and changing and shifting message, so it's hard for him to make a statement that people can count on at this point. But I would suggest that he put his support, the support of this country, behind the stabilizing influence, the most stabilizing influence there, which is at this point the military, and ask them to make a commitment to maintain order and keep the functions of Egypt going, and also to follow George Washington's lead and turn Egypt over to the people and let the people have their kind of a voice, so that their constitutional protections and free market capitalism, and if that can happen, it's sound like a bit of a miracle, but I'm just telling you what I think would be best, Greg. It's a difficult situation to assess, especially because I'm not sitting in State Department briefings, CIA briefings, or anybody else's. I'm operating off of the media reports as the rest of the country is.
Last question on this front, sir. And when you think about the way this has been handled by our administration over the past 2.5 weeks and moving forward, what would you change or encourage the president to consider in the next few days here?
Well, it's hard to look back or forwards because it's been a moving target all along. But I got the sense that the president was trying to be on the right side of history without actually making a commitment. And I think he hesitated too long with Iran. I don't think he sent the right messages there. If there had been a strong message for liberty and freedom expressed by the president in Iran, I think you might have seen a chance some months ago that Iran could have turned over. And so where we are today, I would like to hear the president call for the formation of a constitutional government in Egypt that reflects the voice of the people, that rejects terrorism and advocates for freedom of speech, religion, press, and assembly, and many of the principles that are in our Bill of Rights. That would be a strong statement, and it's one that may inspire the Egyptian people. They'll get one chance in their lifetime to get this right, and it's hard. It's hard to get to the level of freedom we are in this country. And they shouldn't have illusions about that, but they should have the voice of the American people to support them.
Well, just one final question on this front. I apologize, but if, in fact, they can pull this off, there's been so much talk about how this could go horribly wrong, but if they can make this a successful democracy, how big of an impact would that have on the region?
Well, it would be huge. I don't know how we would measure it completely, but I will tell you that you know, that the Bush doctrine has been to promote freedom throughout the Middle East and the Muslim countries in particular. And the President Bush has said that freedom beats in the heart of every man and every woman, and that that's God gives us these rights. And that that because of that, people are inspired towards freedom, and eventually you cannot suppress it. So if you look across the map in your mind's eye, if you're listening on the radio, as we will be, and going from west to east, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, look to the south to Egypt. If Egypt could become the moderate Muslim democracy, Iraq can be defined that today. If we could have the same level of success in Afghanistan, what happens then in Iran? Perhaps Iran turns over towards liberty and freedom, and that could potentially be the case in some of the other countries, Algeria, Tunisia, Yemen, perhaps even Saudi Arabia. We may be on the beginning of a new Arab awakening that could follow in the path of the wall going down in 1989 and the freedom that echoed across all across Europe, Eastern Europe, and partway across Asia.
Well, certainly a tipping point in one direction or another probably coming up in the next few months or even a couple of years here. In our remaining couple of minutes, Congressman, I certainly want to get your reaction to what happened on the House floor a couple of nights ago, and that's that on a suspension of the rules, two-thirds being necessary to renew some of the more controversial provisions of the Patriot Act, like warrantless wiretapping, checking on library records, and in cases where folks possibly have links to terrorism. There were many more Democrats than last time that voted against this, and even some of the more libertarian-leaning conservatives in the House did so. Still a majority in favor of renewing, but not the two-thirds. How did you read that, and how did you vote?
Well, I voted in favor of renewing those three provisions of the Patriot Act. I think it extended them for 9 months. It gives us time to hold hearings and examine the impact of them in this new climate of a Republican majority. And it's a different perspective that we bring to the table. But for me, I've been on the Judiciary Committee now into my ninth year. And throughout the Patriot Act debate, I came in after it was passed, but from that point on, I've been into the secured room for classified briefings for days on end, and I will tell you that I have yet to discover an individual in America that has had their rights trampled because of the Patriot Act. I understand the hypothetical arguments that are there, and we put some protections in place. I think that cooler heads need to prevail. We should reauthorize the Patriot Act for the period of time that I've suggested, and do our due diligence from a Republican perspective. If there are rights that have been trampled, or rights that clearly, are likely to be trampled, we should find ways to protect people's rights while not sacrificing American security. So I just don't think it's as intense an issue as it sometimes comes from the purely libertarian side of this, that if you sacrifice security so that you have the purest form of some people's interpretation of constitutional rights. We've always provided for search and seizure. It's provided for in the Constitution. We just need to make sure we have the proper oversight so that government doesn't get out of control.
Since these provisions have been in place in the wake of 9/11, what has been the track record of respecting rights while implementing these policies? And do you fear that any of these are ripe for abuse at any point?
Well, I think that the track record has been that I haven't seen abuses outside the parameters of the law, but I will tell you that the national security letters that some entities are handed or individuals causes me some sense of concern, because not only does it allow for the gathering of information or the national security letter, but it prohibits the entity who receives that letter from disclosing the fact that the information has been requested of them. That concerns me, and the oversight from the FISA court is important, and I want to go back and review each one of these components to make sure I'm comfortable with it again from the perspective of individual rights. But at this point, I don't know of individuals that have had their rights trampled, and over the next 9 months, we can examine this far more closely, and hopefully I'll hear from Americans that are concerned about it, and I'll continue to look into their concerns.
Congressman, two major stories. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Greg. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King, member of the House Judiciary Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.